So that's a song, We Are Young, by the band Fun. It's a big hit in the last few months. The film clip's a bar fight. His girlfriend gets smashed with a bottle over the head. So we thought we'd just show the words. We'll get back to it. But it's common in Western society, Canada, US, Australia. It's common for Christianity to be critiqued. And it's often, beyond critique, it's often mocked as ludicrous. I found a quote the other day by a screenwriter, Edward Arnold, and he said, God is an infantile fantasy which was necessary, and listen to this, which was necessary when men did not understand what lightning was. God is a cop-out. It strikes me that when someone rejects Christianity, they don't believe in nothing. They always believe in something. And usually in Canada and Australia, people believe in secularism. They don't believe in nothing. They choose not to believe Christianity, and they believe in something. And what they believe in usually is secularism. And secularism, in a nutshell, says that there's no God. And if there is a truth, if there is access to truth, then science is the most reliable source of truth. So I think a very helpful question to ask, but put secularism and Christianity up there, pit them against each other, if you like, and ask the critical questions of both worldviews. Which one makes sense of life? How do they go? And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to ask of both worldviews, Christianity and secularism, the hard questions, and see which makes sense of reality. And here are some of the questions that we want to focus on. First, beginnings. Which one can explain anything about how the universe begins? Number two, life. Is life meaningful and valuable within this worldview? And then third, death. Can this worldview make sense of death? And I think that these are three critical points on which a worldview has to have good answers. How did the whole thing start? How did we get here? Second, what about the middle? How does life go? What's the purpose of life? And then second, how about endings? How about death? And if, frankly, if a worldview can't do well on those three points, I don't think it's a robust worldview that's worth entertaining. So we're going to move then the focus from answering tough questions about Christianity to scrutinising both Christianity and the alternative that people sometimes run to. Now we're going to start with the last one, death, and see how these worldviews make sense of death. So let's go. Some of this content I've dealt with about 18 months ago. So here's a story in my own life. The year is 2007 AD, and it's morning. As I take my black suit out of the wardrobe, I cross my fingers that it's clean. I only wear this suit on days like today. I get in the car and drive, and there are two crematoriums on Delo Road, and I enter the wrong one. Crematoriums are hard to find. They're tucked away, out of sight, out of mind. I correct my mistake and find the North Chapel. The North Chapel sits by itself in a bare paddock of marked graves. It feels like something totally separate from me or anything I know. It has an air of sterility about it. Long black cars, mysterious, parked outside. I find my friends. We're here because my friend Matt's father has died. We're here to support him and his mother. I join the slowly filing line. A man with slicked back hair and dark glasses asks me to sign the guest book. He reminds me of the man who sold me my car. And inside, 50 people squash into the small white room. Its strange appearance makes me think of Jesus' comments about whitewashed tombs. Smothered handkerchief sobs punctuate the stiff silence. And the coffin claims my attention, front and center, neat and decorated. The attendant bows to the coffin. I've only ever seen one Caucasian man bow to another when one of them is in a wooden box. There's a service, the words ashes to ashes, as a motorized curtain moves to hide the coffin from view. And we file out. So death, in Canadian society and Australian society, is held at arm's length and hushed. Think of the way that death is referred to in our society. its dreadful significance is played down with. It's played down with phrases like, he's passed on, she's passed away, anything but to say that they've died. Either that or death is joked about. He's pushing up the daisies. She's kicked the bucket. And nervous laughter in our culture, nervous laughter in face of death is common. So Oscar Wilde said on his deathbed in the room where he was about to die, he looked around the great playwright Oscar Wilde and said, "These curtains are dreadful. One of us will have to go." So death is hidden away in our culture. And the crematorium, where I personally as a pastor have taken the most funerals, Pine Grove Memorial Crematorium, it's hidden on the edge of the suburbs next to the garbage dump. And at the root of this denial and nervous joking about death in our culture is this. Our secular society has no firm explanation of the meaning of death and what comes afterwards. So death is feared. No explanations, no hope, nothing to pray, only endings, last breaths, and fear. And as we start to think about worldviews, this is very serious. Secularism is not able to explain this most important event in our lives, our death. And it seems to me that this is a hint, a glitch in the matrix, if you like. A hint that the theory of secularism is inadequate and that perhaps there is more to life. Because secularism at this point is not corresponding to and explaining the realities of life. However, by comparison, 70 years ago, where were people buried? 70 years ago, people were often buried in the churchyard in the centre of town. Far from hidden, death was advertised. And it was grieved visibly, locally, publicly. So why were corpses buried so publicly 70 years ago? Why this almost brazen advertisement of death? It's because Christians anticipated the resurrection. They were waiting for the day of Christ's return when churchyards would be full of renewed people. And tombstones, as I've shown you before, often have this beautiful Latin word written on them back in those days. The Latin word is resurgam. I don't know if we've got it there, Tim. Latin word meaning, I will arise. So where does this confidence come from? This confidence is rooted in a belief in God. A God who's given his son to defeat death. And this belief in God enables Christians to look death in the face, to grieve it, to proclaim it an atrocity, but to face it. Now, if you think that this belief in God, that God will raise the dead so that we don't have to run away from it, is fanciful, if you think that's fanciful, consider this. It's only fanciful if you're sure there's not a God. If there's not a God, of course, it is impossible that God will raise the dead. But on the other hand, if there is a God, and 95% of the global population believe there is a God of some kind, and if this God made the world and made you and I, and again, the majority of the global population believe there is and he did, then it makes sense that such a God, such a creator, wouldn't give up on his world, but would return to renew his world and to restore it back to life. And this indeed is what God, the Bible promises. So let's just pause at this point and compare the two worldviews. We've got beginnings, life and death. And in secularism, death is hidden away. And in Christianity, death is acknowledged, it's grieved as an atrocity, but it's affirmed as defeated. I think this is a great weakness in secularism at this point. Okay, let's move to the second. Let's move to beginnings. So here's the image that Arnold Sikkema showed us yesterday, and again, as he said, it's taken from the Hubble telescope that's orbiting the Earth. And this is the picture that he said, if you hold a grain of sand at arm's length, that's the portion of sky that's behind the grain of sand. And he told us that there are 3,000 galaxies in that photograph, And in each of the galaxies, there's 260 billion stars. And when Arnold said that last week, I think that's the point where my brain exploded. And James Sire is an expert on worldviews, and he wrote a book, The Universe Next Door, and he said this about worldviews. If a worldview is to be robust, it must be able to explain beginnings. It must be able to explain how we got here. So now we're going to critique both worldviews and look at them through the lens of beginnings. Which worldview and how do these worldviews explain how we got here, Christianity and secularism? And the question is often asked in this way, and I find this very helpful. What is the first cause of the universe? What started the whole thing? So every event has a cause. So flowers grow because the rain falls. And the rain falls because the water droplets get heavy enough in the clouds. And the water droplets get heavy in the clouds because the water drops attract one another. Every event has a cause. And so what we're saying is if you go back and back and back and back and back in the string of causations, where do you get back to in the end? What's the first cause of the universe? How did it all begin? And I'll just flag this at this point. Without the existence of God, it's very hard to find a first cause for the universe. Without the existence of God, it's very hard to postulate a first cause. And philosopher William Lane Craig has said this very well. He's suggested that there is, he says, quote, a never-faltered cosmological principle that nothing comes from nothing. If there's nothing in the beginning, then nothing will come from it. And so William Lane Craig says nothing will come from nothing. If there's nothing in the beginning, nothing will come from it. So he asks, what was there in the beginning? And if nothing was there, nothing could result. So needless to say, that the most common scientific view of beginnings, and it's believed by many Christians, is this. The universe began with a Big Bang, a cosmic explosion that sent the universe in an ever-expanding trajectory. And the explosion was caused when cosmic dust of enormous weight compressed together by its own gravity. Now let's grant this for the sake of argument. The question then is asked, where did this cosmic dust come from? What was the first cause? Cosmic dust doesn't come from nowhere. And again, going back to William Lane Craig, if in the beginning there was nothing, no matter, no energy, no God, then nothing will be the result. Because as William Lane Craig says, nothing comes from nothing. But then William Lane Craig does a very clever thing. He reverses this thought. He says, let's reverse this thought. In the universe today, we don't have nothing. Today we have a universe full of stars, galaxies, black holes, nebula, and the Earth. And the existence of the universe says there must be a first cause. It suggests that there's something outside of the universe, something not caught up in the history of the universe, that has established a beginning. So Christianity affirms that this powerful beginning, this first cause, is the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. And that's how Christianity explains the beginning of the universe, with that first cause. So again, going back to the beginning, James Sire, in The Universe Next Door, he writes this, that a good worldview should be able to explain the question of beginnings. How did we get here? What's the first cause? Christianity says, in the beginning, God created, and secularism has no answer. So there's our table there. We've got death hidden away in secularism and beginnings, no first cause in secularism. Moving on to life now, the middle one. Meaningfulness, the meaning of life. It seems to me that secularism, when it's pared back, has difficulty affirming that life is truly meaningful. It's difficult from the bare bones of secularism to find a vision for life and a value for humanity within the secular story. So here are four reasons, and I think I've written it on the paper there, here are four reasons why I think it's difficult to affirm that life is meaningful within secularism. First of all, if humanity and all the world is a mere chance of nature, it's difficult to affirm that life is truly meaningful. If humanity and all the world is just a chance of nature and no more, it's difficult to affirm that life is truly meaningful. Secondly, If cosmic dust came together without design or purpose to form the universe, if cosmic dust came together without design or purpose to form the universe, then what is the purpose of the universe and what is the purpose of our lives? I think the question's begged. And then third, how can humanity be affirmed as truly valuable if biological evolution is the full explanation of how humanity arrived on the scene? How can humanity be affirmed as truly valuable if biological evolution is the full explanation of how humanity arrived on the scene? I'm not pushing against biological evolution. I'm just saying if that's the only thing to be said, how can humanity be affirmed as valuable? And then fourth, if survival of the fittest is the only truth about humanity arrived. And I think this is a very important point. If survival of the fittest is the only truth about humanity arrived, then isn't survival of the fittest the best way to life, or at least an okay way to live? The strongest and the richest and the most powerful have every right to trample on the weak if biological evolution has the last word. I can't see how you can affirm a value for vulnerable people if survival of the fittest is the way we got here. I can't see it. So what I'm saying is secularism has real difficulty in affirming that humanity is valuable and that life is meaningful. And it boils down to this. Our secular scientific worldview tells us a lot, a staggering amount about how we work, how the human body works, but it tells us nothing about why we work or why life is meaningful. So now back to that song we started with by the band Fun, We Are Young. And what I want to argue is that song is in a way a natural product of a secular worldview. And the chorus runs, tonight we are young, so let's set the world on fire. We can burn brighter than the sun. I won't sing it to you. And I think, I just want to say, on one hand, I think the song is compelling. Like it's a party song, the emotional high of a party with friends and music and kind of just emotional abandon. And I can see why the song went huge, and I can see the attractiveness in the song, and I can see why it's fun. I understand that. But I also think that we can analyze it on a deeper level. And this is a deeper level, I think. The music is military style. It's marching music. The kind of music, to quote Brielle, that calls us with the marching drums to stand taller, to stand proud, to inspire us to action. And the genre of the song, in fact, is an anthem. It's actually an anthem, musically. It's a statement, therefore, of what we believe and of what we value. Now, what is it that's valued in the song? The song is about a guy at a party who, and this is his anthem, is hoping that at all the end of it, once this girl gets very, very drunk, he can carry her home tonight. And I suggest that it boils down to hedonism. And hedonism is a complicated word that means just living for pleasure, period. Just living for pleasure. It's hedonism. And I think that hedonism, a life of just living for pleasure, is a vision for life that emerges naturally from secularism. So hedonism, this endless pursuit of pleasure, results from a worldview, I think, that can't give meaning to life and can't give, most importantly, a vision for life. If the worldview can't give a vision for life, can't give a meaning to life, then what do? You just seek pleasure. I think that is a real fall in the secular worldview. It can't give meaning to life, and so it's nourishing a bunch of young adults who live just for pleasure. Now, here's the crunch. This is a very important point. Here's the crunch. This isn't despair. I'm not finishing with despair here. This is very important. We know, humanity knows deep down that life is meaningful. Christians know it, secularists know it, atheists know it. We know that life is meaningful in our hearts. We know that people are valuable. And we do, all of us, we do cherish relationships and we do cherish breath and trees and fresh air. And despite our selfishness, there is hardly a person in Canada who doesn't wish that world poverty would cease and that the climate would remain stable in terms of its temperature. And a scientific worldview, a secular worldview that is purely secular, cannot explain what we know to be true, that life is meaningful and that people matter and that the world is valuable. It can't explain what we know to be true, what 99.9% of human beings know to be true, that life does have meaning, that people are valuable, secularism cannot affirm it. It has no explanation for the significance of life. How about the Christian worldview? For the Christian, at the heart of reality is a God who gives generously. He gifts us with life, life in a world that both delights us and requires our care. And I love this quote once again by Gordon Spikeman. I think this is the 60th million times I've quoted it in this church in the last 18 months. But it's my favorite quote in the world. God's creation is evidence of the caring hand of the Creator reaching out to secure the well-being of His creatures. Of a Father extending a universe full of blessings to His children. So Christianity explains the meaning and value of life in this way. Life is a gift from God. I love this cartoon. It's by an Australian cartoonist called Lunig. I know I'm somebody because God don't make no junk. And here's the thing. Secularists know they're somebody. They know humankind is valuable, but they can't affirm it logically from the point of view of their worldview, which begs the question, rethink your worldview. So in summary, beginnings. Secularism, there's no first cause. Christianity, in the beginning, God created. Second, in the middle, life, meaning of life. Secularism can't explain the meaningfulness of life. Christianity says life is a gift. Death. Secularism hides death away. It's huge. Secularism hides death away. Our culture hides death. Christianity, death is acknowledged, grieved, and defeated. Now, my caveat is I know that I can't logically prove Christianity. I know that. And I'm not trying to logically prove Christianity some watertight 100% thing. I'm just saying I think secularism is a poor worldview. And I want to say this. I want to make this point that a lot of people miss, I think, in our culture. Secularism requires an act of faith. Secularism requires an act of faith. Belief in secularism requires a decision to believe a particular worldview. This is a very important point. You see, in Canada and Australia, it is common to think that this, it's common to think that secularists, atheists, trust in science and rationality and what is observable. They trust in science. But religious people, we just live by a mysterious belief. You see, what I'm saying is that secularism is far from the obvious natural explanation for reality. It cannot explain the significant aspects of our life. So secularism is an act of faith. And in my opinion, it takes not only faith, but a wild stretch of the imagination to believe in any worldview that cannot explain the most significant aspects of our life. And in my opinion, secularism is in this category. I think that there are a lot of worldviews that are far more robust than secularism. I would put Hinduism or Buddhism or even Islam in a category of being more robust than a secular atheistic worldview. G.K. Chesterton said this. He said, when people stop believing in God, they don't believe in nothing. They believe in anything. And I think in the Western world that is absolutely true. On the other hand, and I love this quote, my brother-in-law Brad gave me this week, Chesterton also said that he is a Christian, listen to this, he is a Christian because Christianity is like life. I think on the basis of the discussion, you can understand what Chesterton is saying. The biblical story corresponds with reality. It can explain, it knows what's significant about life, and it speaks into it. And I believe, personally, I believe that the biblical story is very much like life. Far more like life than secularism. And I believe this story, the biblical story, as a true story of the world. And at that, we finish our series, Reasons for Faith. We come to worship now at the Lord's table.